And now
it's 10 a.m.
Let's just get down to it.
And it's time for your sports fix.
Strap yourselves in, folks.
From two guys who have covered the teams you're passionate about for years.
We are professionals.
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
The KSL Sports Zone. Jake Scott, Ben Anderson. Is this in honor of Bacon coming back the other day, Sarah? Now listen, I love Kenny Loggins. I'm a legit fan.
It's not, but it could be. Now that you say that, sure.
Yeah, he came back. What was that, Ben? Like last week?
Yeah, week and a half ago.
For the anniversary or something? He went to their prom?
It had something to do with the high school, right?
Yeah, where they filmed it.
Yeah, but are they tearing it down or something? And they
got. I think it was just like the 40th anniversary.
All right.
30th? 40th.
Yeah, I think it was just for an anniversary, and so he went to go, and he went to one of their dances.
He actually showed up at the prom. That's pretty rad.
Yeah, very cool.
Wonder how long it took he spent in our fine community to film that thing.
A couple months, probably.
You know what's hilarious about that movie? Like, throughout my life in Salt Lake and in Utah. Like, to think when I was a young child, Ben, Provo, Salt Lake, Ogden, three separate cities, surrounded by suburbs, yes, but separate from, like, you could go through swaths of emptiness before you got to the next suburb, right? It has since grown all together. We're pretty much solid city from Brigham City to Spanish Fork, right? I mean, with, you know, there's spots, I suppose, in Lehigh and that sort of thing where we have yet to fill out, but pretty much down that entire corridor, right?
Yeah.
I think where that was filmed and the Lehigh roller mills and all that stuff was at one point out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, the boonies.
Think about that.
As they say, yeah.
It is no longer out in the middle of nowhere.
I mean, honestly, I don't remember a whole lot of stuff when I was younger past like 130th South. You know, out past, was that Southtown Mall? Or is that, what's the furthest mall in the valley?
Yeah, Southtown Mall.
Uh-huh. Like beyond that, kind of died. It kind of fell off a little bit. And now, yeah, like you said, I mean, it basically takes you to the point of the mountain. And then point of the mountain turns right into everything south now. It's crazy, yeah. We've just developed so quickly. Hence, why I don't think we're going to ever have any issues with pro sports teams moving here.
No,
finding a fan base.
I think that's the reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the reason, and we got a lot to build on. I'm a big fan of the tech industry, as you know. And it's why, you know, when they say, you know, Jim Olson said it the other day, Ryan said it, you know, these outside investors are investing in our community. Like the NHL is investing in our community. That is 100% true.
What do you think? We haven't talked about this, but it felt like for a minute there, they were kind of nose and nose. And now it has obviously shifted dramatically in one direction. What do you think is happening with baseball? And I don't mean like, what do you think Steve Starks and the Miller Group are doing at this moment? I mean, like, big picture, how is the NHL arriving in Salt Lake City in Utah so rapidly going to change whatever prospect we had of getting Major League Baseball?
It won't, and why would it?
I almost wonder if it speeds up the process in a way of where it was kind of this pipe dream, and I don't want to say it was impossible. Like, the Millers have done a lot of work, and I believe that they're putting in all this effort to, what do they call it, the energy area? What's that called? The power district?
Yeah.
Down in Rose Park. They're obviously like breaking ground there for a reason because they really believe there's an opportunity to get it. I almost wonder if we have a Vegas-like run, and I'm not pretending we're Vegas, where they just say, like, as soon as hockey took off in Vegas, everybody flocked there. Every major league sport was like, yeah, we got to get there. We got to get there as quickly as possible. that's the best market. It's amazing. We're not that. But if hockey comes in and sells out for three straight years, I think that could help Major League Baseball versus it trying to be this experiment of like, oh, is this going to work or not?
So I buy into your proof of concept that could speed up the process. I just know Major League Baseball moves at a crawl.
Molasses.
The NHL moves. They packed up a franchise overnight and moved it to Salt Lake.
And it's not the first time it's happened.
No.
They've had other really quick turnarounds.
They've got U-Haul on speed dial.
Yeah.
They've got a retainer with U-Haul. They're like, hey, we're going to need you again.
Yep.
Or what's the big moving company these days? England used to be a
Bailey's.
Big deal when I was a kid. But yeah, they got a retainer with it. Baseball doesn't really roll that way. And they don't really expand that way. And they're not really in a hurry to move teams out of markets. I mean, what, Montreal was the last one that moved? Unless I'm forgetting somebody. And before that,
Yeah, I mean, the Marlins rebranded to Miami Marlins from
Florida. But they never moved.
Yeah, they just changed the name.
Yeah.
Tampa's moving to St. Pete.
That doesn't count.
It doesn't count. I mean, that's like...
Moving in market.
Yeah, that's like going from Salt Lake to Bluffdale.
Yeah,
that's
Tampa's
not...
The Rays have been in St. Pete.
Sure. But their new area is not where they're... They're just building a new stadium.
Yeah.
So it's not that far off. Do you know how far it is?
From Tampa?
Where they're building their new...
From their new one? I don't know.
It's not that far, though.
Yeah, but I don't think it's very far. They just found more land somewhere else.
So yeah, there's just not that many places to do it. Yeah, you can move your...
Washington football team, the Commies, they moved. They're in Maryland.
Yeah.
And well, I think they're moving, or they want to move back to D.C., or are they moving to Northern Virginia?
I mean, the Coyotes, right? They went from Phoenix to...
Right. In market doesn't count.
Scottsdale or Tempe or whatever they were doing.
But
I mean,
I don't know.
Messed them up pretty badly, but...
Major League Baseball before that, when was the last time they moved anybody? I mean, that's how dire it is in Oakland. They don't want to move.
Yeah. And that's certainly where it's going, and that might be enough to just... Have them punt everything for another 10 years and say, well, we just did it. We just moved Oakland to Las Vegas.
They still need to make up that pandemic dough somehow. And that was always the incentive for Major League Baseball to expand again, which still makes a ton of sense. But they had to get your St. Petersburg building in line, and they had to figure out what they were going to do with the A's. Problem solved with the A's, and now they can figure out if they're going to expand and take those expansion fees, and I would guess, yes, 100% the Millers are still very much a part of that conversation, so much so that, yeah, they're putting wheels in motion, and I think it's great. I don't want to say inevitable because I don't know, but it feels that way a little bit. They're going to go, Major League Baseball is going to go to Nashville, and then they'll look for something out west to keep things counterbalanced, I would think. And Portland doesn't seem to have their act together, although who knows?
Yeah. Things can change quickly, as we've learned.
But, like, having a facility basically going and dough in hand, yeah, that's going to put you ahead of some other markets.
No, I mean, it's just incredible. It's amazing, again, that this has all happened so quickly. And, again, I'm sure that there are people behind the scenes in the SEG group that would laugh about the idea of this happening quickly because— You know, Sam Farnsworth shared a tweet. Remember, he sent out, he tweeted at Ryan Smith and said, man, the Stanley Cup playoffs are awesome. We need to bring this to Utah. And this was a year ago when Ryan Smith replied, in the works, you know. And even before that, when he got the Arctos group involved, it was to bring another franchise in. Now, that was only 2 years ago, less than 2 years ago. To have it here is still insanely quick. But one of the things that I think Ryan Smith has said that is accurate is you just can't blink. You just can't have any pause. And the second you show pause, there's a chance that they say, okay, it's not Salt Lake, it's Portland. Portland's now the front runner. So if the Millers are serious about doing this, and all indication is that they are, yeah, it's just got to keep – I mean, they've got to keep the pressure on. And that's one of the things I think Ryan did really well that's probably a little bit underappreciated is he found where Gary Bettman was going to be. He cut him off. And then had dinner with him and met him and kept repeating the process over and over and over until that team became available. And then he didn't balk and say, well, you know what? I actually like the idea of an expansion team. Give me 2 years. I can start all my branding. I can have all my own players. I can hire my own people. I can put together all the teams you have to have behind the scenes, including, you know, your sales staff, your management staff, your social media team, all your advertising group, all these people. He didn't blink. He didn't balk at any of that. He just said, yeah, I'll take it all. Give me everything. We'll figure it out. And we're all going to benefit from it.
All right. I want to give one more thought on your Vegas comparison in one sec. But Devin did tweet into the show, said Kevin Bacon was at the school because they are tearing down the school. I was correct. It was also the 40-year anniversary of Footloose.
Why are we tearing down the school?
So, yeah, it was like the last...
I don't know what school it is.
It was the last prom.
I've never gone there.
At that school.
But all of a sudden, I'm emotionally attached.
All right. People should not compare us to Vegas ever, because actually, our community has a much taller task. Because we don't... Listen, in Vegas, they banked on... Because Vegas is a smaller market than Salt Lake. I don't know how many people actually realize that, but Vegas is a smaller market. There are fewer people that that live there. I believe that's still true. But they've got all these tourists that are there 24/7. And they've got an excuse. Everybody's looking for an excuse to go to Las Vegas. So a byproduct of that has been that the Raiders don't have a home field advantage anymore. Hockey has actually really been immune to it. They've got a really solid local season ticket base,
yep,
base or whatever. A lot of that had to do with them being there first. But they can handle multiple major league teams, no problem, because people are coming in and out of there. They're all going to go and travel and see their team. You know, how many obnoxious, like, Jets fans are in the Western United States? And when the Jets end up in Vegas, you know, Kevin Graham calls all his buddies and they're like, hey,
we're going.
We're booking some rooms at the Monte Carlo.
We're getting our cheap suit jackets and our fedoras and we're going to Vegas.
Yeah, I did pick a hotel too that didn't exist or doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
And they're going, you know, and so they have a real added advantage there. Plus, I don't know how much you know about the history of Vegas, Ben, but there is a ton of dough in Vegas. Like,
well,
just
you know what?
Money in general, like they have a huge, huge advantage.
Really easy to raise taxes there too, because you can truly tax all the outsiders.
Shake down all the tourists.
Just say, yeah, we're raising the resort fees 1% and we're going to pay off this thing by noon today.
Buffets
are going up 30 cents a ticket and yeah, we'll have this thing paid for by next month.
We have to do it the old fashioned way. I mean, these guys, the Millers, Ryan Smith, obviously, they're going to have to build fan bases. They're going to have to go out and, you know, hit the streets for sponsorship dough. I mean, they're going to have to do it really the hard way. So I don't think it's fair to compare us to Vegas in many ways, shapes, or forms. I think we have the ability to bring a true home field court ice advantage to really any sport, because they're going to have to build fan bases. And Vegas, have you obviously you have tuned into Raider games? I haven't gone down to one yet, but I mean, half the Duren stands at least are the other team.
Yeah.
I mean, that down to the point where they're begging season ticket holders down there not to sell their tickets.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't give them don't give them to other teams. Absolutely.
And what that turns into is, well, if you were any good, we'd probably come to the game. But since you stink, and I got this Niner fan blowing me up online for my ticks, I'm going to sell it.
Right. And that is a funny cycle, because it continues to backfall, right? You're bad because the fans aren't there, and the fans aren't there because you're bad.
Yeah. Well, and I'm sure they sell a ton of tickets to hotels, right?
Yeah.
And who are hotels giving those tickets to? Not the Raider fans who are staying in their penthouse that weekend.
Right. Well, I know two people who have gone to the games, Lloyd and Scotty.
They're both.
And Lloyd went for the Raiders.
Yeah, Lloyd did.
And Scotty went for the Broncos.
For the Donks.
So we're half and half already. My sample size is 50-50 who's going to these games. It's not always the fans of the Raiders.
And I randomly know some Raiders fans from Salt Lake who have made the trek. So it is some Raider fans coming, but it is notable. You know, it's notable in the Chargers, when the Chargers play, that all these, you know, transplants come out to watch their team, because nobody cares about the Chargers. In Los Angeles. Couldn't fill a soccer stadium.
But, again, to paint this as a big picture, then also kind of a microcosm, because I know a lot of Jazz fans have been worried about how do you build a basketball team. It's exactly as we've talked about this whole process with hockey. You just have to remain in a situation where you've got the ability to make a major move when it presents itself. And then when it presents itself, you make the best offer. And that's how you make things move quickly. And Danny Ainge has done it before. Ryan Smith has now done it on a macro scale with a hockey team. And you just have to be in the situation where if Devin Booker asks out of Phoenix now, you say, we'll be there for you. Love to help you out with your Devin Booker problem. And, you know, Devin Booker's a placeholder. Could be any number of names. There's a lot of guys out there. But when those types of opportunities present themselves, maybe it's Giannis this summer.
You pick the right one and go for it.
You pick the right one. You make the right investment. And then you can move from there. And we'll see how quickly that can actually work. What's going on, very interestingly, right now in the NBA is that a lot of these teams, I recognize Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was a part of a trade, but was such a young player in this trade. A lot of these teams have been built through the draft. It's kind of flipped. All of a sudden, these teams that were building through trade, which was the zeitgeist for a minute there, it's kind of flipped. Mostly, Minnesota's built through the draft. Rudy Gobert is an obvious trade candidate that they acquired a couple of years ago from the Jazz. But OKC's built through the draft. Dallas is mostly built through the draft when you consider certainly what they're getting with Luka Doncic. And these teams that are trying to trade for everything like Phoenix are a bit of a nightmare. So I'll be curious. I don't think just because it's happening now means it's a permanent trend.
Well, picking the wrong trade can be... It's amazing it wasn't more of a setback, the Kyrie thing in Boston. Because it really wasn't a setback. I mean, they sent some assets out, you know, that they probably could have done some other things with. But he eventually left as a free agent, and I would guess they weren't really unhappy that he left. And
but you're right. That was essentially, I don't want to say a wasted asset, but you didn't keep those assets alive when he left.
No, you flushed them down the toilet.
Yeah.
And it never really worked. But he didn't spend everything, obviously. So you got to pick the right trade, right? You know, for example, what if Zion, who the Pelicans are like, we can't do this. We got to back the minivan up, flip him for some stuff that maybe we can add to our roster that we think is pretty good and make a different move because this guy just doesn't play. Would the Jazz be interested in Zion? Would anybody be interested in Zion? Because that's a huge risk. But you want to know how you get the next Joel Embiid? Well, they took a huge risk on his health.
Yep.
And sometimes it doesn't pay off, but you've got to pick the right risk.
It is funny how many names it's seemingly Jazz fans are writing off that they'd have no interest in. It's like, there's truly no perfect players. There's not a perfect NBA player. And you know what? The perfect NBA players do not get traded.
No.
But there's no risk-free player you're trying to acquire.
And
either in the draft or in, you know, the draft is all risk. You don't know if Victor Wembanyama is ever going to turn into Victor Wembanyama. Good thing, year one, he has. We don't know what that looks like for year two, three, or four. Sure, Zion's far from a perfect player. You could say, oh, he's always hurt. I don't want him. It's like, well, a lot of these guys are hurt a lot. A lot of the guys don't play.
And the NBA is, listen, I think the non-shooter is being phased out, yes. But the NBA has always been about dominance. Like, I've always made the argument that Shaq wasn't good at basketball, because he wasn't. But he was dominant. Like, you could not stop him offensively. There's only one player in the NBA, in my opinion, that truly has that potential where the other team just doesn't have an answer. Like, you can put three guys on him and it's not going to matter. And that's Zion. It used to be LeBron.
Yeah.
When LeBron was excited about getting up ahead of steam and going to the bucket, like, there was nobody who could stand in front of him when he did it. And there's only one player in the NBA with that potential, and it's Zion. If he could ever string together and actually play, he could be a revolutionary dominance in a way, even though he can't shoot. As long as he can shoot well enough from the foul line, somebody that size who's that athletic is unstoppable, unguardable.
Yep.
So, of course, teams are going to be interested in him. I would be curious if the Jazz would be, because that's a huge risk. Both on the court and off it, from what I can tell.
Yeah, right. That's the problem with Zion, is it's not just on the court. I mean, between he and the guy who's absolutely going to be available this offseason, Brandon Ingram, I would still say, yeah, you got to go with Zion. Because what you can't do is all these guys who look like something that aren't actually difference makers. And that's the problem with Brandon Ingram, who has these great moments where he can be special, and then has moments like he just...
But he's an all-star, and we actually overvalue what that means. To your point.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Like, he's good.
Yeah, he's super talented.
We shouldn't talk about him not being good. But if super we're talking talented. About in LeBron's terms, he's him. Like, somebody who's truly a difference maker. And Steph Curry was that, too, in a different kind of way. And revolutionized the game. But, maybe Wemby has that opportunity.
Yeah.
But it's not like, pick your run-of-the-mill all-star. Pick Donovan Mitchell. He doesn't have that ability.
Yep.
You can take Orlando's proving it. You can take Donovan Mitchell out of a game. You can take Donovan Mitchell out of a series. You can do that. And no offense to Donovan, because you could take 99.999% of the people who've ever played basketball out of a game. No problem.
Yeah.
The Lakers were fairly effective running double teams at Jokic last night.
It's what the Suns are learning with Bradley Beal. Bradley Beal, you can go back. I'll pull up his thing. 3 All-Stars. 2021 All-NBA player. Averages 22 points a game for his career. You're thinking, man, that guy's really good. I think that's really going to work. He's got all these All-Stars. It doesn't mean anything. Yeah. Those don't mean anything. Versus, a Jamal Murray who hits another game winner last night and has never made an All-NBA team, has never made an All-Star team. He has a level of dominance. For whatever reason, the word you used, he's got a level of that ability to make an impact when the games matter most, and that is what you have to find.
Real quick here, Ben, and we'll get to top three stories coming up next. Our buddy Colton says, this is the first time the Falcons play in Vegas. I'm going to try and get down there to the game. It's close enough for me to go.
Yeah.
Bingo. That's half their crowd.
Absolutely.
Can you imagine if you're... one of the Raiders, and you're going out there like fourth quarter, like really, we got to get after it. And you're the offense, where you need some quiet because you're making some calls and some adjustments at the line, and you get,
yeah,
you're like, where am I?
Everyone be quiet. Yeah, it gets louder.
Where am I? Jeez.
It's what the 76ers are dealing with. 76ers fans walked out to MVP chants for Jalen Brunson at home because New York to Philadelphia is not a very far drive, and it costs a third to get into the Philadelphia arena, apparently, compared to what it costs to get into Madison Square Garden. Madison Square Garden tickets right now are $1,000 a pop. The worst seat in the house is $1,000 to go watch the Knicks in the playoffs. $300 for the Philly game. So fans are going to drive to Philly. You can get a hotel and a ticket to the game for half the cost.
Yep. And I honestly don't blame fans for cashing in such situations.
No. You want to sell your ticket there and pay for next year's season tickets? Good on you.
I remember Jazz fans doing that in the finals. I'll part ways with the game because it's going to fund, season tickets for the next couple of years or
my
whatever.
House. Yeah.
I don't blame fans for doing that. I'm sure players get a little bit annoyed. But in Vegas's case, if the Raiders, this actually puts more pressure on the Raiders to be good. Because they're not going to keep their tickets unless there's something to get excited about. They're just not.
Yep. And there will always be a market for the other fans.
Markets. Yep. Absolutely. And they're going to pay a zillion bucks because they're already paying a zillion bucks to come to Vegas. So they don't care. All right. Top three stories of the day. KSLSports.com coming up next. It is Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
It's time to break down the biggest stories of the day.
Let's go.
This is the top three stories of the day on KSLSports.com. On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
I'm all right. Nobody but about me. Why you got to give me a fight? Can't you just let me?
I'm so glad we're going Kenny Loggins today. I don't know. Kenny just puts me in a good mood. He found this random, I'm going to write movie songs genre.
Smart.
Because we had Footloose in the first segment, and this was from, you know what movie this is from? I know Sarah doesn't.
It's not Caddyshack.
It is Caddyshack.
Caddyshack, okay.
Yes, very much it is.
Okay. I didn't know if that was, did he write it for Caddyshack?
He did.
Okay. I didn't know if he wrote it for or if it was just featured in.
Kind of funny. Both turned out to be famous, but nobody really connects the dots until you think, oh yeah, this did play in that movie.
Yeah.
All right, time for the top three stories of the day at KSLSports.com, brought to you by Jay Brooks Jewelers. Two locations to serve you, one on Winchester Street across from Fashion Place Mall, the other at Traverse Mountain in Lehigh. All right, Sarah, where are we starting today?
Number one, the Lakers are eliminated in the first round.
Hilarious.
Good games. Actually, that was a good series. And I think there are a lot of Nuggets fans right now who were kind of just cashing their chips thinking, all we got to do is wait and see if we can beat the Boston Celtics in the finals. And that's really the big question. Man, they are about to get a huge wake-up call against the Minnesota Timberwolves, who are a better team than the Lakers. Now, I have questions about how good is this Suns team that the Timberwolves just ran over. The Suns were a disaster all year, and maybe the Timberwolves just took advantage of that. And everything the Timberwolves do well, which is have a bunch of size and athleticism to guard the players that Phoenix has, maybe that just made them look really good. And when you have Nikola Jokic and you have championship experience, that's going to be a lot different than what they ran into. But, I mean, going back to Denver and eliminating the Lakers, they beat the Lakers 12 out of the last 13 times they've played. I mean, it's a level of dominance because LeBron is still very good. Anthony Davis is still very good. The rest of the team is a disaster. They need to make significant changes. But man, when I look around, the Lakers are an example of this. The Suns are an example of this. Those teams would be better off pulling a Jazz and blowing it up and getting all their assets and starting over than continuing to try to make Trae Young-type trades on the margins to think you're going to get back to relevancy. You're not. The Suns are not one move away from getting back to being relevant. The Lakers are not one move away from being relevant. You won one game in the playoffs. You think Trae Young's going to get you the other 11 you need to win a finals?
I doubt it.
Like, Suns fans, you just won zero games in the playoffs. How are you going to get the next 12 by improving on the margins? You honestly need to trade Devin Booker and Kevin Durant. You can't trade Bradley Beal. I'm sorry.
No,
you've killed yourself
with
that.
There.
But get 5 first-round picks for Devin Booker and young players. Get 4 first-round picks for Kevin Durant and young players. And start over. That's your closest path to getting back to being relevant.
The mortgage guy ain't going to do it.
Because Kevin Durant's getting older. Devin Booker's going to leave as soon as you trade Kevin Durant. And his value continues to drop. Speaking of Kevin Durant, not Devin Booker. So you got to pull the plug. And the Lakers, I mean, you can't trade LeBron. I get it. And as long as you have LeBron, you're not going to trade Anthony Davis. But that is a bad example of player empowerment, where you are killing the next half decade of your franchise to appease LeBron James so you can draft Bronny James. you're not even close. You're going to trade 3 first-round draft picks and Austin Reeves this summer for Trae Young? That's your move? You're going to give up more draft capital? You're going to mortgage yourself through 2032. It's 2024. I know time moves fast, but you're going to mortgage all your picks through 2031, 32. You already owe one to the Jazz for Trae Young, who doesn't change the team he's already on?
Well, they shouldn't have traded all their assets for Rusty Westbrook. I mean, and by the way, LeBron could do them a favor and opt out of next year's $51.4 million contract and become a free agent, which would truly be doing them a favor. Unless they wanted to be savvy and talk him into picking up his option only to trade him. But I doubt they'd do that. But yeah, they shouldn't, like, this sounds weird, but they really shouldn't have signed LeBron in the first place. Because the Lakers were actually doing what you were talking about. And they were building assets. We remember all those young players. Remember Brandon Ingram, the number two pick in the draft, mm-hmm. right? I mean, Kuz was a part of that. I mean, they were acquiring all these young players, and they weren't perfect. I mean, they got baited into drafting Lonzo Ball somehow. LeVar is just a
master.
Mastermind.
Yep.
And they were actually building, and then LeBron came in, and they signed LeBron. And then from there, it's just been a make-it-rain fire sale of every asset until 2050, apparently.
And I know you don't count it. They did win a title.
They even if you count that Mickey Mouse title, it's basically been a failure. They have missed the playoffs more than they've made it.
They peaked really quickly because they won it in, what, LeBron's second year there, third year there? And then it's been I know they made a conference finals last year. They got swept in the conference finals. Like, it actually wasn't – it's not like it was a close series.
No.
This wasn't close. I know they're going to say, like, oh, that was competitive.
It was a gentleman's
4-1.
Sweep.
4-1. Yeah. You know what I mean?
The gentleman's sweep.
It was 4-1.
If they talk themselves into being a Trae Young away from a title, I mean, it's bad management. And you know what? The Buss family, in my opinion, and that's why the Mickey Mouse title, I actually think, did them a disservice. Because the Buss family, since the passing of the late, great Jerry Buss, has basically been inept. since. It started with the bozo son. Which one was that? John? Jim.
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 Yeah.
The bozo son. And then Genie, who was basically granted overall control of the franchise. The son was granted basketball ops control. I think it was in the will. Anywho, Jim turned out to be a bozo. Jim had to go.
Mm-hmm.
Genie steps in and takes over. She hires Kurt Rambis' wife, who's like her best friend, to be the Rasputin. And then says, Magic Johnson.
Yeah, we want Magic.
We want Magic. And then they traded Magic for LeBron. And now LeBron and Rich Paul are running them into the ground.
Yeah.
Long term.
It's the wake of the fallout is going to be long for the end of LeBron James.
Like, do you think Anthony Davis is going anywhere? He's signed until 27-28. He's got $280 million guaranteed on that deal. Do you think Clutch is moving out of L.A.? LeBron can't be around forever. You think that Anthony Davis will just allow himself to be traded?
No.
Like, he's there forever. So you might as well. I don't know what you should do. Might as well trade for Trae Young, I guess. You're stuck.
Yeah, you are stuck. And you've got LeBron.
LeBron really did put you in a huge hole, yep. Just like he did Cleveland.
And they're not going to be able to dig themselves out of it for a long time. It's going to take a very long time.
He did it to Cleveland twice. Remember when the Cavs the first time pushed it all in on like Antoine Jameson or something like that? And they got to the finals. And then Cleveland was a shell of a franchise for at least a half decade.
They got 2 number one overall picks. And
then LeBron came back.
4 years, right? And then LeBron's like, okay, you're good enough.
I'm going to come back. And going to squander all of that you've built.
Tonight, 76ers taking on the Knicks, a chance for the Knicks to close out this series with another 4-1 victory. We will see how that plays out. And then quickly becoming my favorite series to watch, even though the games have been borderline unwatchable, Cavaliers Magic back in Cleveland, series tied 2-2. Then the worst series, Pacers Bucks.
Go Magic. If they can score at all.
If you can hit some shots, you got a chance to win this game.
Then they have a shot.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun one. I'm excited to watch it.
All right, what's next?
Number two, Utah NHL team's GM Bill Armstrong was on Hands and Scotty, and this is what he said about the future of the team.
We're not a perfectly built team right now, but we're getting there. And every year from now, for the next 10 years, we're going to be adding good pieces every year out of the draft into our team. So I think the advantage to the people in Salt Lake is they didn't buy an expansion team where, you know, you got 32, 33-year-old players coming in. You've got 23-year-old players, and they're exciting players to watch. And if we do this process right, we get a chance to be good for about 10 straight years.
$40-plus million in salary cap space this offseason, which is basically half your roster. You've got $93, $98 million salary cap. They've got 20 picks in the top three rounds over the next 3 years, which is, listening to the podcast I listened to, which I know a lot of people did as well, it's kind of the hot spot for drafting. It's not like the NBA draft where once you get to the second round, once you get out of the top eight picks in the NBA, it's kind of a guess. Those top three rounds are all really valuable. You've got 20 picks there. And I thought one of the things that Bill Armstrong said that was really interesting yesterday was that you build through the draft. You build your core through the draft. Now, the nice thing is you actually can hold on to those players in the NHL. It's not like the
NBA. 9 years.
But you hold on to those players, and then you put the right pieces around them to supplement your roster via free agency and via trade. But you build through the draft, and you can see that they've done that with these young guys and Logan Cooley and Dylan Gunther and Josh Doan, some of these names that we've talked about quite a bit. And then, yeah, you work around it. You find the pieces there. So you hope they hit. You've got the draft lottery coming up next week, end of next week, in the NHL, and you hope you move up there to get another star player. But they're in really good shape.
I've been trying to dig into this a little bit with hockey folks I know behind, you know, kind of people who know how the game's played from a financial standpoint and building teams, to your point. And it seems to me that what's his bozo in Phoenix?
Ishbia?
No. Moreno? Morello.
Morello. Alex Morello.
Actually has done them a really big favor in a weird way. He made a bunch of unpopular decisions that actually is really beneficial to the current new regime. Because he would develop a player to where that player was good enough to get paid. And they said, well, I'm not going to pay this guy. And so he would make an unpopular decision by trading that popular player and bringing back assets. And then it would happen over and over and over again. It was a weird Donald Sterling-like thing where they didn't have the resources to give these players money anyway, so they were just going to flip them, and all of a sudden you've got like a bursting farm system. And a, you know, we saw with the, speaking of, what's his name, Billy Bean, that the Moneyball guy. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, you've got a farm system that's just bursting, and you've got picks, and you've got all this sort of thing. But the good news is, unlike baseball, with hockey, the ownership really has all the leverage from a CBA standpoint. So when he says build through the draft, that is especially true in hockey, because as you point out, and I thought you laid it out well, you're going to keep these guys. You're actually going to get to develop them. It's what kind of college used to be, believe it or not, before this transfer mess and stuff like that. Like, you're going to go play in Des Moines, and you're going to get better, and we're going to have control of you, and when you're good, we're going to get you out there, and then you're going to get paid. And in a normal franchise, you really make those critical decisions on when you're trying to win and when you're trying to pay your guys, because you've got a hard cap and that sort of thing. But in the Coyotes situation, they were just flip every good player we got because we don't want to give them any dough.
And let me add two things to that. One of the things that Morello was praised for, and this ties into Bill Armstrong, was he really heavily invested in the front office, because Bill Armstrong was a kind of a big name, and he'd been the whatever associate GM in St. Louis, and they had built a Stanley Cup team, and he went and got like the hot name, like the big name that you wanted to build your team to come in and oversee your front office. And he invested in that heavily. Now, they have $40 million because Alex Morello was not willing to invest in players, like you're saying. He was cheap. He didn't want to spend the money on his roster if he didn't have to. And now, all of a sudden, Ryan Smith wants to come in and spend money to win. So you have all this flexibility because the last guy was so cheap.
Yep.
And now Ryan says, I want to invest in this team.
No, let's do this thing.
And you've got opportunities. Now, I don't think they're going to go hand out a bunch of bad contracts. Don't be mad Ishbia in the NBA. Don't go out and sign a bunch of players to bad deals. Continue to develop through the draft. Use these young players. Don't trade them all now just to get a couple of 28-year-olds who could help you, you know, win 45 games next season. I don't think that's the plan, and I think you hear Bill Armstrong talking about it. They value their draft picks. They're going to continue to build that way. But again, they're young. They're exciting, and I'm excited to watch them.
All right, what's next?
Number three, post-spring Big 12 football power rankings.
Mitch Harper did this for us at kslsports.com. You can go take a look at it. A bunch of the employees here at kslsports.com voted on who they think the best team is in the Big 12 coming out of spring football. A little bit of a surprise. Oklahoma State coming in at number one.
Yeah, Arizona, the former number one, down two, and the Utes up one to two. Your Kansas Jayhawks coming in at number four. Followed by Kansas State, then West Virginia. Iowa State, the Mighty Cyclones. UCF, Texas Tech. Colorado. Ben, are you here for this Buffalo slander?
Two top 10 picks projected already in the 2025 NFL draft with Shadur and their two-way guy. So
TCU tied at 10th, BYU at 12th, Baylor 13, Arizona State 14, Houston 15, Cincinnati 16.
Way too low for BYU. 12th?
Yeah, it feels a little low, but they need to find a quarterback. What's that all about? We've been talking about that a ton.
McKay Hillstead, brother.
Yeah.
12th out of 16, I think, is too low for BYU. Now, the difference between 12 and 7 is not that much. You know, you're talking about a 5-7 team and a 6-6 team or a 7-5 team. So BYU's got to get a couple of those wins to go their way, and I suspect they will be better than they were last year.
And that's what the league was last year, so I get what you're saying. But you better hope that the distance between 12 and 13 is quite vast, because BYU's awful close to the dregs. Like,
absolutely.
Like Baylor, Arizona State, yikes. Houston, yikes. Cincinnati, yikes. Like, you don't want to be in that convo. Be in the convo with TCU and Iowa State.
The advantage for Oklahoma State is they've got a running game, and you know who it's going to be. Ollie Gordon's one of the best running backs in college football. Having that is very helpful, and they do what they always do. They turn it on towards the end of the season. We will see if Utah having what could be, I mean, I know a lot of people would say Shedeur Sanders, I would say the most experienced and proven quarterback in the conference coming back next year in Cam Rising, Brant Keithy. They can figure out their running game.
I haven't been following it close enough. Did Deion cut the whole line and start over?
The transfer portal's been, pretty devastating for them again. But they haven't brought in the transfers that are coming in like they did last year that everyone thought, okay, this team's the real deal.
And there was only like 28,000 at their spring game, which is still a great number, but down from...
They sold out.
Yeah, whatever it was last year. Well, you got to win at some point. And he might not know what he's doing.
I'm very curious about Arizona next year as well. You lose your coach. Noah Fifita stuck around. I get it, but it's a lot to lose.
You got the quarterback, though. You shouldn't be bad.
Yeah, Noah Fifita's good.
I don't know if you're going to win the league, but you shouldn't stink. Like, Arizona State's going to stink.
Well, that's a safe bet most years.
Can you believe that Herm Edwards is back on television and Antonio Pierce is a head football coach in the NFL?
Hey, man, once you've been there.
It is.
Again, it's not even proof of concept. It's just concept. You don't even need proof that you can do anything. As long as you've been there, someone's going to be like, well, Isaiah Thomas has a job in the NBA. He's a Rasputin. It's not an official title.
But
it's just like, oh, you've been there. I guess I will just trust you to be in that spot. But we know people like that. Luckily, this place where we work doesn't have a lot of that. Like, we haven't just hired a lot of people because they have held this spot elsewhere. I might be the lone exception, but we have not hired a lot of people just because they had a job elsewhere. Everyone has earned their spot. Again, I might be the lone exception. So I applaud the smart people at Bonneville.
Imagine anybody. And do you remember, Ben, when he bought the Suns, people were talking about Michigan State and he's a player and all this sort of thing. Can you imagine being dumb enough? I don't care how he made his money, but being dumb enough to get a call from Isaiah Thomas and actually picking up?
No.
Can you imagine? Like,
I can't. But again, it's just because you play doesn't mean you know anything about basketball. Well, just because you're a billionaire doesn't mean you know anything about anything. And Matt Ishbia has proven both to be true.
But Isaiah Thomas has proven his lack of capability.
True incompetence.
Repeatedly.
True incompetence.
Repeatedly.
Malpractice and incompetence.
Yeah, stuff like that.
And Ishbia was like, cool.
Give me Zeke. Give me Zeke on the horn.
I was at Michigan State when I was a kid, and Isaiah Thomas was a star. I grew up in that area, and Isaiah Thomas was the man.
Listen, we are lucky that Isaiah Thomas is here.
It's like
we
win the lotto, bought the Utah Jazz, and said, you know who I got to have? I got to have Blue Edwards. He was my favorite player when I was 8 years old. Dial up Blue Edwards to come and run the Utah Jazz. So, yeah, what are you doing, Matt Ishbia?
Oh, I think you're
Here's the thing. The problem is, Blue Edwards probably has a clean resume compared to Isaiah.
I was going to say, quit slandering Blue Edwards. He hasn't repeatedly failed running NBA franchises over and over again in spectacular fashion.
What is Theodore up to?
I don't know, but I'd give him a better shot at running an NBA franchise than old Zeke.
Hey, but Matt Ishbia's got that team headed in the right direction.
Clearly. The NBA's worst contract.
Oof.
Star that's past his prime and... star that's good, but clearly going nowhere on this roster because they got nothing else. The Ted Cruz lookalike.
I don't understand NBA teams. What is Devin Booker good at? Well, he might be the best shooting guard in the NBA. You know what we should do? We should make him our point guard. What? What are you talking about? You know what he's great at? Let's have him do different stuff. Okay.
Other things. Okay. All right. Stay tuned. More next. Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
The sports you love, the teams you can't live without.
You have sense of urgency!
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Jake Scott, Ben Anderson. I saw a replay of not this game from LeBron, but the game before his tirade where he was. Did you see that?
Yeah.
It became a meme and all that sort of thing. Is there anything out there or has there been anything out there that would make you that upset? I mean, to demonstrate it that way.
That demonstrative where he's jumping up and down and stamping his feet about, he hates Darvin Ham.
Like I had a parking spot issue. I chose Sunday afternoon as a good day to go to the world's busiest Costco down in 21st South.
Yeah.
And had an issue where somebody, you know, slid in when my blinker was on.
Oh, okay. That's not cool.
And I drove off.
Yeah, you didn't jump up and stamp your feet.
I was okay. But I don't behave that way normally, but I did think about it for a hot second because I was bothered.
You and I live just charmed lives. Not a lot of foot stamping for us.
Hey, listen, very serious things. I'm not stamping my feet. I'm hopefully behaving rationally.
Correct.
And tackling what's in front of me. But, you know, something silly.
What?
Honestly, and we used to do this bit blocked in real life with Lloyd, but honestly, people who leave the shopping carts just hanging out in the parking lot.
Especially,
if I see somebody doing that, like I feel like that reaction
is
coming.
That's not my biggest pet peeve, I will tell you the truth. Like, if you're whatever. I mean, I try and
you
take
can't
them back.
March it 10 feet?
I'm with you. I get it. The worst is if you take up a parking spot with it. Like, if you actually just leave it in the parking spot next to you where you were, and all of a sudden nobody can use that parking spot, that's pretty egregious. I don't know if it's foot stamping egregious.
If you see somebody doing it, just look at the cart and then just get in their car.
Come on, guy. I'm with you. Hey, and you know what? If you can take the cart in with you, good for you. Like, if you're going in and you can remedy somebody else's problem, they leave it out, you grab it and take it and use it as your cart, good on you. That's the right way to do it. When was the last time you felt like a coach deserved to be fired? Because I think Frank Vogel's going to get fired, and I think Darvin Ham's going to get fired.
Well, that's a complicated question, because do I think they should have been hired in the first place?
Sure, maybe not.
But I don't like, you know, standing up here and demanding people lose their jobs. I mean, that's ghoulish.
Well, again, they're not Trae Young away from winning 11 more games in L.A. And they're not, you know, re-signing Royce O'Neal away from winning 12 more games in Phoenix to get to a title in the playoffs. But you know what? They're also not firing Darvin Ham away, and they're not firing Frank Vogel away.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, Ben, see, this is why I don't like looking at this guy should be fired or not. Let's look at this from a rational situation and try to examine what actually happens in these sorts of things. Can you fire LeBron?
No.
Can you fire Anthony Davis?
No.
Can you fire D'Angelo Russell? Can you fire Darvin Ham?
You might be able to fire D'Angelo Russell, but yeah. No, you can't. You can fire Darvin Ham. You can't fire players on guaranteed contracts.
Ask me if it's easy or hard to fire Darvin Ham, to fire a coach. Ask me if that's an easy thing to do or a hard thing to do.
Extremely easy.
Just pick up the phone.
Yeah, right. Oh, call his agent. You don't even have to talk to Darvin if you don't want to.
It doesn't take examining the actual
Hell,
problems.
The last time the Lakers did it, they had Woj fire Frank Vogel.
They did. You honestly, there's nothing you have to do. You don't have to. It's a way of, like, you don't have to go through self-examination. It's what I fear about Ozempic, is that, like, it will immediately slim people down, but we won't learn that, you know, diet and exercise matters. That's, like, still a thing. Like, we should get into some good habits. You know what I mean?
Took a left turn, but okay.
Firing the coach is really easy and doesn't necessarily solve
it's
the problem.
It's a quick
problem.
Fix, and yeah. It may not be a fix.
You're right. It doesn't require, like, okay, I got to figure out what direction I'm going in and do some real self-examination here and then figure out what the best way to proceed is. Like, Cleveland, to their credit, I think really looked into it and said, like, we are giving our franchise to this man. But we're willing to do it because we are a perennial loser and we've never gotten over the hump. And there's LeBron just happened to be born in Akron. Like, we're just going to give it to him. That's what they said when he came back. They said, here you go.
Yeah.
Just take it. It's all yours. We'll hire who you want as a general manager. They'll just say yes to your every whim. And it will be worth it to us in the long term because we're never going to get back here again because we're perennial underachievers. And I don't think the Lakers need to be in that position, but at least Cleveland admitted it. The Lakers won't move off LeBron or Anthony Davis. They won't move off Clutch. They won't move off Pelinka. They won't move off Kurt Rambis's wife. They're going to look at Darvin, and Darvin should have known this from day one because it happened to his predecessor. Like, the one to go inevitably when LeBron ultimately fails, what is the prevailing narrative? Doesn't have enough help.
Yeah.
Doesn't have enough help. Here is a guy that never is accountable for the shortcomings of his team. It's been true throughout his career. It's somebody else's fault.
Yeah.
And in the case of the Lakers, the pigeon is Darvin Ham. And your point, is it going to solve anything? No. Is it going to be what they're going to do? Yes.
Yeah.
And they should never have hired him in the first place because he had no experience. And you have to come in and deal with the most high-maintenance guy in the league and try to get this thing on the tracks? No, you're not going to you're not going to make that right hire. You know why? Because LeBron doesn't want that guy. LeBron wants somebody that he can push around because LeBron is the coach of the team.
You know what the irony is? The big name that's out there as far as a coach that they could chase, and maybe he wouldn't take the Lakers job, maybe he'd rather the Phoenix job, but it's probably Mike Budenholzer. Championship resume, won in Milwaukee, was viewed as one of the best coaches in the NBA. Head coach in Milwaukee. Where did Darvin Ham come from?
Right.
He was Bud's number one assistant in Milwaukee.
But listen, why is Bud no longer the coach in Milwaukee? The star didn't like him.
Star didn't like him. Yep.
LeBron's not going to hire somebody. I found it so interesting that Ty Lue passed on the Lakers job when he was offered it.
Yep.
And the Laker PR was, oh, they lowballed him. That was the Laker PR, was they thought they could just lowball him and he come back and coach LeBron and he took a higher paying gig with the Clippers. Nah, man, he passed on coaching LeBron again. And he should have. Ty Lue is a really good coach. And maybe he would have a Mickey Mouse title if he would have made a different decision. But who's a better coach right now, Ty Lue or Frank Vogel?
Ty Lue.
By a mile, you know why? Because Ty Lue's going to have a job. And Frank Vogel's not.
Yeah. And Ty Lue does have a title already, to his credit. With
LeBron.
That he passed on coaching LeBron a second time was telling. Yeah. Very telling.
So, interesting. And everybody can celebrate LeBron for player empowerment. And you could say it's a good thing and blah, blah, blah. And maybe it is. I don't know. I don't know everything. But I do know that the power that this guy wields is just wrong. He's wrong a lot. How about that? Misguided. That's what I was looking for. Misguided. He's wrong. But because he's so good, you don't realize he's wrong. And then when he fails, you go, well, it's the other guy's fault. But then you go, well, why is the other guy there? Like in Cleveland, remember when J.R. Smith didn't know the score and LeBron's like pointing and didn't know how much time's left or whatever? Why was J.R. Smith on the team? Because he's represented by Clutch, and LeBron twisted the arm of the Cavs to get J.R. Smith all this money, and then the guy forgets the score and what time it is. LeBron yells at him and says, well, it's J.R. Smith's fault. It's like, but why is J.R. Smith here? Why is he in the position to be a cornerstone, to be finishing games in the finals? Well, that was my decision.
That was mine. But I'm going to blame the coach for not having us prepared.
I tell you what, that coach, it's David Blatt's fault. I hope I get into the position where I can just throw people under the bus and be so good at my job that I cover up how bad some of that stuff
become
is.
Become unfireable.
Man, we'd all like to get there. I think the Lakers could 100% fire him, though. If he opted in, I'd trade him. I'd move Anthony Davis and I'd start anew. But they're not going to do it.
Nope, they would never
They're not going to do it because they handed their franchise to LeBron. Well, good times.
Team building is a tough biz.
Can't drag a team single-handedly to the finals anymore. He's still good. He's not that good.
Everyone's looking at Minnesota as this ideal franchise for how to build a team. They haven't won a playoff series in 20 years until yesterday.
Yeah, that's really something. All right, stay tuned. We're way over. It's my fault. Jake and Ben, want to remind you about our friends at Peach Doors and Windows, Utah's premier door and window retailer, combining beauty and technology on doors and windows since 1993. Call them today. Your free in-home estimate, 801-566-1255. Peach Doors and Windows.
Than us.
Your home for the best sports coverage in Utah. You're listening to Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Want to remind you about Win Ticket Wednesday, your chance to win big every week on the station. This week on Win Ticket Wednesday, you can win a pair of tickets to go see Pitbull at Utah First Credit Union Amphitheater on September 25th. Listen to the KSL Sports Zone all day on Wednesday for your chance to win. Man, that read went a lot smoother today than it did yesterday. I will tell you that.
Well, you get better every day.
It was Monday.
1% better every day.
It was Monday, Ben. You brought this up in the last hour, but we now have the Nuggets to set up to take on Rudy Gobert and the Timberwolves in round number two, what should be a really good series. I'm really excited about it. However, I feel like I'm maybe a little, and this feels really weird to say, but a little less sure about the Wolves than you are?
It's a total mystery to me, and that's why I'm excited about it. I'm very impressed by what the Timberwolves just did to the Suns. And yet, what the Timberwolves just did to the Suns is exactly what a 3 seed is supposed to do to a 6 seed that was a New Orleans Pelicans collapse away from being in the play-in tournament. Like, the Suns should have been in a play-in tournament. Instead, the Pelicans blew a 4-point lead with a minute to go, or the Kings blew a 4-point lead with a minute to go against Phoenix, and New Orleans needed to get hurt down the street. Like, all these things had to happen for Phoenix to avoid the play-in and get to the 6 seed. And you know what? 6 seeds are supposed to get thrashed. You're just supposed to. And they did. They got absolutely thrashed by a team that is better than they are and was better than them all year. And look, I liked Minnesota. I think I had said all season I thought Minnesota was going to have home court advantage in the first round. I think that was one of the predictions I had made, and it came to fruition. Now, here's the problem. Does Phoenix make anything hard for you? Did they take anything away at all from Minnesota? Like, was there anything Minnesota likes to do that all of a sudden was not available?
No, because Phoenix went all in on offense. And so they don't make it difficult for anybody.
They don't make it difficult
for anybody. That's why I didn't believe in the Nets when they tried to put that thing together.
And even then, like, I didn't watch anything on Memphis, on Phoenix, where I thought, oh, man, they're really pushing Minnesota's defense to, like, test their limits. They're really putting Minnesota in a quagmire.
No, they failed across the board. Totally agree.
You can keep Rudy Gobert on the floor for all 35 minutes he wants to play, and you can have Cat out there for 35 minutes. They didn't exploit a single matchup.
Well, I told you that Frank Vogel was just a yes man. You expect a yes man to go out and come up with a game plan? No, I agree with you. They got swept.
Yeah, it was a mess.
Is there anybody who's saying Phoenix is any good today? Is there anybody coming out and is saying, like, that is a team?
No. So in
that
sense,
they don't even have the Mike Conley hammy to go, well, if it weren't for Mike Conley's hamstring.
Right. Like, and that's not Grayson Allen's ankle.
They got nothing.
So,
all right.
A disaster.
Phoenix stinks and Minnesota did what they should.
Yeah. So why am I giving Minnesota so much credit? I am wowed by the power of Anthony Edwards and the plays he makes. And we didn't have the idiotic mistakes that Cat is so notorious for making. Cat is kind of a dumb player historically. He gets a ton of offensive fouls. He throws balls into the fourth row, like constantly on horrendous passes when he's trying to kick out. Rudy Gobert gets embarrassed when he tries to make plays with the ball in his hands. Like, the reason they needed Mike Conley and gave up the pieces they did, which in retrospect was a very good trade, the Lakers look like a disaster for trading a fourth round pick or a top four protected pick for a rental of D'Lo, who's not going to be there next year. But they needed a guy to just make sure they weren't making terrible decisions over and over down the stretch, and Mike Conley has helped cool those Jets. And now I think you're seeing Anthony Edwards have some great fourth quarters and make those decisions, but again, is he making decisions against a team that doesn't ask you to make difficult decisions? Bradley Beal did not ask Anthony Edwards to make one difficult decision in that entire playoff series because he's so bad. Bradley Beal is such a bad basketball player on that end of the floor. He's going to make your life really easy. Well, you go from Bradley Beal to all of a sudden Aaron Gordon's defending you, and Aaron Gordon might be one of the three best perimeter defenders in the NBA, and he's actually big enough and athletic enough to stick with Anthony Edwards, and now Ant's got to make all these great decisions. And KCP is guarding Mike Conley, who's going to make Mike Conley's life really hard. And Mike's going to have to make good decisions, but make shots.
He can barely walk, KCP, so if he's healthy, I agree, but he didn't look so healthy yesterday.
The nice thing is they don't play till Saturday.
Right.
So they've got to have 5 days for that ankle to get better. And then on top of it, you have the greatest pick-your-poison player in the NBA right now in Nikola Jokic, which it doesn't matter. You can play right, and he's still going to pick you apart. Because his second-best option is just as good as his first option, which is you want to take him away from scoring, he'll pass. And he's going to make the right pass every time, and then you're cooked. And if he doesn't want to pass, he'll shoot 65% from the floor and hit a floater at an unbelievable rate, and you lose there as well. So I think this is going to be a great series. I won't be surprised if it goes 7, but Denver is just a completely different beast than what Phoenix offered. So maybe I'm giving Minnesota a little bit too much credit. Like, Jaden McDaniels has never had to make tough decisions in his life on an NBA court, and all of a sudden has to make perfect decisions now.
I actually think you and I are pretty comfortably on the same page. And here's the thing. Here's why I'm doubting Minnesota. Because I'm thinking about matchups. Because in the NBA, all the teams are good outside of the Suns. And how do you match up against that team? The year the Jazz went to the conference finals, Dallas got Golden State in the first round, the worst possible matchup they could possibly imagine. Was Golden State better than Dallas that year? Not a chance.
No.
Did they just catch lightning in a bottle for a series? Yes. And the Jazz proved that the next series when they stomped them on their way to the Western Conference Finals, where they would have had a tough time with Dallas, I would have bet, and Dirk Nowitzki. Who's going to guard Jokic?
I think they probably put either Rudy one-on-one or they put Kat and they let Rudy roam.
They're going to settle on option B because Rudy can't guard Jokic because it makes Rudy do all the things that he's not best at. And we've seen that in playoff series, actually. And
I mean, Jokic isn't bothered by having Rudy on him at all. At all. Doesn't care at all.
And, you know, when you see it over and over again, the nail, that Jokic gets the ball at the nail, then Rudy has to step out, and all of a sudden Rudy's not Rudy. So I don't think they settle on doing that. I think it will fall on Karl-Anthony Towns to guard Rudy and – or to guard, excuse me, Nikola Jokic. And I don't trust him for some of the reasons you laid out there on being able to do that, but he's so important to – Minnesota offensively, you can't really take him off the floor. So I think that's ultimately where they fall.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go, okay, but Anthony Edwards is really good. So he can really be the best player in the series, possibly. But then Aaron Gordon, his job is to take the other team's best player out of the game. And he's one of the best three or four players in the NBA at doing that. Why did Andre Iguodala win the finals MVP, Ben?
Took LeBron out of the series.
Took LeBron right out of the series. Wasn't valuable to them for anything else but that.
Right.
And who knew that that's what Aaron Gordon would turn out to be? But he's really, really good at it. I know I would not bet on Anthony Edwards having a really good series. I mean, he'll still get stats, but I wouldn't bet on him having a really good series. So then that comes down to what does Denver do with Karl-Anthony Towns? And is Karl-Anthony Towns good enough to offensively make Denver pay? And again, I just don't think I'm betting on Karl-Anthony Towns. So I'm really worried about Minnesota, to be honest.
And the other thing, and this has been a fun story, and I hope I didn't, if you follow me on Twitter, you may have seen it. I've been kind of talking about how, oh, well, maybe the Jazz actually should have used Nikhil Alexander-Walker in their first round series against Dallas when Jalen Brunson was going off. And Nikhil is actually a pretty good defensive player.
He is a good defensive
player. And the Jazz didn't use him. He played 4 minutes. It was a mistake. Jazz made a lot of mistakes in their run in their previous in their previous formation. I'm not actually betting on Nikhil Alexander-Walker to follow up the first-round series he just had in the second round. The truth is, historically, every game Nikhil Alexander-Walker has played would tell you that the first three games he had in this series were the anomaly and not what you should expect. He had a three-game run. Incredible. And I'm rooting for Nikhil. I think one of the reasons he wanted out of Utah, he was having serious emotional issues as far as, like, does he like basketball? He talked a lot about how much therapy he had to go to, how to find happiness, how to forgive himself for making a mistake on a play. Like, he was crushing himself with the pressure to be a great NBA player. So I'm really happy to see his success. He averaged 14.7 points and 4 assists, shot the heck out of the ball in those first three games against Phoenix. Great to see him play that way. Also, his game 4, he had 5 points. He was a negative 6. He was 0 of 5 from the 3-point line, 2 of 9 shooting overall. Historically, the odds will tell you he's more likely to go 2 of 9 and have 5 points for the next 4, 5, 6, 7 games than he is to have those elite 3 games that he had against Phoenix. So that's how close you always are to these runs falling apart. That are they so reliant on Nikhil Alexander-Walker suddenly turning into the best 6th man in the NBA that they're susceptible to losing to the reigning NBA champions? If that's what you're betting on, that's probably not a great gamble, actually. You need to make sure that your top three guys are going to be as good as the top three guys in Denver. And right now, Jamal seems to have figured it out in Game 5. He was great last night after not playing particularly well in the first 4 games, I thought. outside of a game winner over Anthony Edwards.
He's rock solid,
or Anthony
though.
Davis. No, he's rock solid. Yeah. I can believe in him. I've seen it. Proof of concept. I know how good Nikola Jokic is. Nikola Jokic is still the best player in the series. And that was something that Anthony Edwards had the advantage of. He was the best player in the series against Phoenix. He's not going to be the best player in the next series. He's not going to be better than Jokic. He can be great. I still don't think he's going to be better than Jokic. And then, yeah, it comes down to Cat versus Michael Porter Jr. Well, Michael Porter Jr. quietly just had an unbelievable series. I just pulled up his numbers. His five games against the Lakers, 22.8 points, 8.4 rebounds. He shot 49% from three on eight attempts. Is he going to shoot that well? Probably not, because Minnesota's got some better defenders. But he's your third option, fourth option. He's going to hit some shots. He's going to continue to play well. So I can't wait for the series. I've been happy for Rudy Gobert to kind of have this victory tour, this victory lap of showing that, like, hey, this myth about what I was or wasn't in Utah was just totally false, and I'm actually a really good player and deserving of this fourth Defensive Player of the Year award, and I'm going to go to the Hall of Fame, and all those things are true. But just because you beat Phoenix in the first round does not mean you're going to carry over that same success or that same formula against the Denver Nuggets.
You make an interesting point about Michael Porter. He is a leaky vessel, in my opinion. He makes some of the dumbest decisions. He had one of the dumbest fouls I've ever seen on LeBron James last night, where LeBron was fumbling it, coming down the lane, regained it, even though he probably traveled, and basically had a dunk. And Michael Porter Jr. just whacked him in the head from behind. Like, no prayer.
No reason, yeah, right. Of not making a play on the ball, yeah, not helping.
I've mentioned this to you before, but like, do you know that was Jerry Sloan's like number one pet peeve? And once it was pointed out to me, you could like set your clock by it, that if you saw a player commit a foul and it was like an and one, and it was the player was going to get an easy layup anyway, and you fouled him, he'd pull any player straight out of the game immediately thereafter. It was like his thing. And it stood out to me ever since, because it truly is such a dumb play. Just let him have the dunk.
Have the dunk. Dunk. Don't give him an extra point, especially in a game that's going to come down to a single basket at the end of the game.
And this is Jerry, who really valued good fouls. Like, his teams led the league in fouling every single year. But it was to prevent hoops. They were good, effective fouls. He was going to use his fouls in a way to punish the other team, not gift the other team easy buckets.
Anyway,
Michael Porter, whatever. His shooting is good, but if you're relying on him to stand in front of Karl Anthony Towns, that's going to be rough. They might have to figure out something else.
That might be the matchup that determines the series.
Yeah, yeah.
If Cat goes off for 25 points a game, like he just had last night, he was great. If he does that and Michael Porter Jr. doesn't have an effect, Minnesota can win the series.
Yep.
If Cat returns to being Cat, and Nikhil Alexander Walker returns to being Nikhil Alexander Walker, and Denver plays like they have when they become a finals team, like they did last year, Denver could win the series, and they could win it in five or six games, and it might not be all that much different than the Lakers series. I also, one more thing quickly on Nikhil Alexander Walker. Again, I'm not trying to overhype that he was the star player that the Jazz shouldn't have traded him a couple of years ago. The truth is, there's a Nikhil Alexander Walker that pops up on every championship team. Those guys actually aren't that rare. There are 50 of those guys in the NBA. They just have to be on the right team at the right situation before they become those players. Nobody wanted Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, right? He was in Washington. The Lakers had him and got rid of him for Russell Westbrook after he had helped them win a title because they believed in him so little. He was the starting shooting guard on that title team and is now the starting shooting guard on another title team in Denver. Bruce Brown was this untouchable player for the Nuggets last year, this invaluable piece coming off the bench. They traded him to Indiana. Indiana couldn't get rid of him fast enough. They traded him to the Raptors for Pascal Siakam, and then the Raptors tried to flip him and couldn't at the trade deadline. Like, these guys who are good two-way players that get all this fame in the postseason, and Nikhil's doing it now, and I'm happy for him, but we pretend like, oh, how did you ever give up Nikhil Alexander Walker? Well, how did anyone ever give up on Bruce Brown? How did anyone ever give up on Kentavious Caldwell-Pope? These guys are in every single championship run, and they always pop up. And you could look at Aaron Nesmith could be one of those guys. You know, like, and everyone says, who's Aaron Nesmith? Exactly. You don't really care about them until they're on your team making a difference, but they have to be on the right team in the right position to win.
Shandon Anderson.
Right, Shandon, Brian Russell, right? Like, all these guys are...
I might put Brian at a step ahead.
Right. So how good was Brian Russell actually?
But Howard Eisley is another one, and both those guys signed with the Knicks, interestingly enough, when Dave Checketts went out there.
All these guys that you're like, oh, man, quintessential. Deshaun Stevenson won a title in Dallas as their lockdown perimeter defender who guarded LeBron in Miami. And people are like, Deshaun, awesome. Nobody wanted him.
Yep.
He just had to be on the right spot playing next to Dirk and Tyson Chandler and have one very specific role to fill.
And in his case, he really matured.
Good for him.
He really matured, and that really kind of launched him to be an NBA veteran like that.
But he's not untradeable. Those guys are always available. This idea that the Jazz gave up on Nikhil Alexander-Walker does not mean they could never get him back. In fact, you know what you are? You're a second-round pick from getting him back. Do you know how I know? Because you know who else is that player? The Jazz just traded him again, Simone Fontecchio. Yeah. He's exactly that player. He hit some big shots in the playoff run for a team and played good defense for a couple of stretches. Those guys are always available. You can always move them. You can always get them back.
Jeremiah Jensen, coming up next. Stay tuned. Want to remind you about to nominate these sports volunteer that you know for the Hercules Hero of the Week. Submit your nomination at kslsports.com/contest and listen every Thursday afternoon to JJ and Alex for the winner. Help us celebrate the efforts of those volunteers making an impact with Hercules Hero of the Week, sponsored by Hercules Credit Union. More next, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Whether it's the Jazz, Utes, Cougars, or Aggies, these guys have got you covered.
Time to eat, fellas.
You're locked on to Jake Scott and Ben Anderson.
1, 2, 3, move it.
On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
See, I told you movie themes. That was his thing.
Smart.
That was 80s Kenny.
I made a lot of money.
He was on that We Are the World documentary. Did you watch that thing on,
I haven't watched it yet.
On the Netflix?
No, I need to watch it.
It was pretty good. I would say
sure
it was
fascinating.
It was worth a watch. I think it's funny that Michael Jackson called Lionel Richie Lionel. Lionel Richie actually pointed it out. He's like, I don't know why he always called me Lionel. Pretty funny.
Strange guy.
Mother's Day is on the way, apparently, Ben. And make Mother's Day easy and get the best gift ever, a blanket or robe from Miki Couture. Mom will love it. Shop online at MikiCouture.com or at any Miki store. They will even take care of the wrapping. Even better, save 50% using promo code ZONE50. Best gift ever, Miki Couture. By the way, leave it. Don't worry about the surprise. Leave it in the Miki bag. We got my niece a Miki for her birthday. And she noticed the bag right when we walked in, and she's like,
that's for me.
Yeah,
I know what that is.
That's it.
Speaking of, sorry, following up before we get to JJ, I just saw a tweet come across my timeline organically, not someone tweeting at me. Aaron Wiggins is awesome in his role. 15 minutes per game. He's averaging 6 points per game on 66% true shooting. His 15% of passes he threw were assists. That trails only LeBron. Excellent, versatile defensive player. Strong positional rebounder, 6'5 with 6'11 wingspan. Does everything you want in a role wing. Again, these ideas, like the Nikhil Alexander Walkers of the world. I get it. You can regret that they're no longer on your roster. You can get Aaron Wiggins in a trade if you want to. Like, there's a million of those guys, actually, that are around. The NBA is full of really talented players. They've just got to be in the right role.
Joining us now, he's the co-host of JJ and Alex every afternoon. And, of course, you see him nightly on KSL Channel 5. He's our buddy, Jeremiah Jensen. What's up, Jeremiah?
Just vibing to some Kenny Loggins.
Yes.
The 80s wouldn't have been the same without him. A true legend.
You know what? We needed some positive vibes in sports around here, and I'm not sure there's a better option than hockey. It has just been – am I missing something? It's basically been a perfect story. There's been no hiccups. The only hard part has been that, like, it's kind of sad that Arizona's losing their team, and then you look at they had a 4,000-seat stadium, and their owner was a bozo, and all of a sudden you're like, yeah, no, this was perfect, and all the players are happy to be here now. I'm not sure I've seen a detractor yet as a part of the story.
It's been an incredible story. And guys, I'm trying to think how far back this would have been, like pipe dream crazy talk, maybe 6 months ago. And to think now that it's all fallen into place perfectly and we have an NHL team that actually could be really good next year. This is not an expansion situation. This is a team that's going to actually compete for a Stanley Cup playoff spot next year. And with Ryan Smith giving Bill some money to play with and some options with free agency. He's not handcuffed anymore. He can actually build a team. Bill Armstrong knows what he's doing. He was the assistant GM for the St. Louis Blues. He won a cup. And now he has an owner that cares and an owner that wants to win, and he can go spend and add some players to this already great group with free agents. And this could be awesome. We could have an NHL Stanley Cup playoff team next year. And I mean, just think how crazy that is. It's almost like falling out of the sky. I know it's not that simple, but you know, credit Ryan and Ashley Smith for doing what they've done and making this deal happen and laying the groundwork, which started long ago with Gary Bettman, to be in the right place at the right time. I mean, in order to have these type of things, you do have to have a billionaire owner, but it's got to be a billionaire owner that people want to do business with. And Ryan is certainly that. So, yeah, it's nothing at this point is gone wrong. And it's amazing. I really think we're going to be stunned. We're going to look back on this 10 years from now and think what an amazing moment that was in our sports, in the sports history of the state, to have this opportunity. And you know, I think that there's amazing things that are going to happen with this. It's just, you're right. It's like a dream. And I think it's going to be a dream for those guys too. You know, they've been in Arizona and playing in front of fans, like 4,000 fans, and Bill Armstrong said it on Scotty and Hans yesterday. They've been playing in front of their home fans, but they've been out cheered by the visiting fans that were wearing the opposite sweaters, supporting other teams like the Oilers or the Kings. So they're going to actually have 16,000 fans cheering for them this fall. And I can't imagine the impact it's going to have on them. It's going to be a ride. It's going to be so much fun.
I knew the players were going to make a good impression here, because hockey players, Jeremiah, I know you've covered some hockey players. They're always great and they have a lot of personality. Yeah. But I'm curious, you mentioned Armstrong, the GM, and of course the Bear, the head coach, Tierney. I'm curious to your first impressions from both those guys.
I think if you're going to have something like this happen, I think they're the perfect people for it. As I mentioned, I did go in on a Bill just a minute ago with his background and having been part of a Stanley Cup championship with the St. Louis Blues. And you look at Coach Tierney, you know, this is a guy that's been selected to be the Canadian head coach, the national team head coach. And these are the top people in hockey. These are people that really know what they're doing. And when you're making a transition like this, you need people that know what they're doing, have the right culture. And by all accounts, everybody I've talked to, Andre Tierney has really established an excellent culture within this team. So you've got the head coach that's built this culture. You've got the GM that's done a great job building this roster. And you got a group of guys who've been through a lot. They have been through a hell heck of a lot the last year. And I think that's bonded them. And you put that mix into this community where we are starving and hungry for a team to support and really, really intrigued by this sport at the highest level in the NHL, and a community that wants a championship and an ownership that wants a championship. I think it's a perfect fit and a perfect marriage. But those are both highly sought after and thought of men in the sport of hockey. And they're going to do an excellent job. And Ryan Smith was brilliant not to be like, I'm going to hire my own people. I'm going to, you know, he stressed, that's what he acquired was the people. He did acquire great people. And these guys know how to run a hockey club. And they're going to get it done. I think that's in your, and fans are going to see that when the puck drops in late September, early October.
We love our celebrities here locally. You know, Ty Burrell could shoot a man on Main Street and probably be let off because we love our celebs and we love our NBA players. One of the things I think that has shocked me is the celebrity status that kind of doesn't exist in the NHL. And maybe I'm just blind to it because we haven't had an NHL team before, but you know, Connor McDavid, some of these superstars around, they're not these big face celebrities like we see with Patrick Mahomes or LeBron James, even if they're at the top of the sport. What I'm trying to get to is I think we're going to make these guys into celebrities locally. And A, I'm very curious to see how they respond, but it's what we do in Salt Lake. We did it with Rudy. We did it with Donovan. We did it with Darren. We did it with Carlos Boozer. We're going to turn these young people into celebrities. And I'm curious, A, how they respond, and then B, if that's different from other NHL markets and if it makes Salt Lake more or less attractive.
That's a great point and something I haven't given a lot of thought of. So I'm going to start processing what you just said right here live on radio. Is I'm thinking about where they've been, and they've been a little anonymous in Phoenix. You got a Suns team that's loaded with Kevin Durant and Bradley Beal and Devin Booker. And then you've got the Arizona Cardinals with Kyler Murray, and you got all those players. And you have a baseball team that was just in the World Series, and lost in the mix is this hockey team that just goes about doing their business, but in a lot of ways, in a lot of sense, has been treated like a minor league hockey team. They've had minor league salaries. Their owners had a minor league mindset, and they've had minor league crowds. And they have not been at that level in Phoenix, even though they've been in one of the largest markets in the country. So they're going to come here, and they're going to be absolute celebrity superstars. And I think they got a feeling and a taste of that last Wednesday. That was a total this welcome to Hollywood type deal, right? I mean, can you imagine like us just like showing up to an arena and 18,000, 20,000 people are there to just cheer us and like welcome us like that? Think about what that would do. I mean, how that would impact a human being. I mean, I can't even imagine. So I can't imagine how they felt that day. And if this team wins right out of the gate, guys, and they have a really great season and they show this similar personality and we all have spicy tuna T-shirts and things like that, heck yeah, they're going to become celebrities. And I think this market is going to be a hot spot for NHL players. I think this is going to be a really friendly place for NHL hockey free agents to want to come. I think it truly fits with the soccer, with the hockey vibe. It's a winter sports town. A lot of guys that come from places like Finland and whatever, I think they'll be very comfortable here. I think you talk to Lowry and he loves it here. It just kind of reminds him a little bit home, right? So because of the mountains and the climate and everything. So, and then on top of that, they're going to be treated like kings. And you get in like major markets, like you get lost because there's three other pro teams. So I think they are going to be treated. And I think it's going to be a positive, guys. As I process this, I think that they're going to feel like rock stars here, where in other markets they disappear. Maybe that's good for some guys. Like you mentioned Connor McDavid, Edmonton Oilers. I mean, it's not – maybe he just likes being anonymous and likes being in a small place like that or where – but, I mean, he's a king in Edmonton. But, you know, as far as, like, you don't see him doing shoe deals or, like, commercials. How many hockey players do you guys see in commercials? I have no idea. I don't recognize it. So – those would be the opportunities there, and I think it's going to be really fascinating to see how that plays out and how we embrace them.
Who won the NFL draft, Jeremiah?
Oh, the Chicago Bears. They now have an identity. They got a face. They have stars. And I think that you looking at that franchise, what is it about the Chicago Bears? And it's a great brand, and obviously they have a great history, but the first thing you think of the Chicago Bears is 1985. That was 40 years ago. What has that franchise done since? I think they made one Super Bowl. Yes, it was kind of a fluke. But where's the stars been other than Brian Urlacher? You know, when have they been dynamic offensively? Never. And so now you're bringing in a quarterback that can give you that dynamic feel, a playmaker, a quarterback, an alpha in Caleb Williams. And he's got weapons. He's got Keenan Allen. Roma Dunze is going to be a star. I think the Bears had an opportunity to redefine their franchise and their image and their talent in this draft, and I think they did it. And there were several other guys I think they picked that are really highly thought of. So the Bears come to mind first of all, and I think that's the team that could make a big jump if obviously Caleb Williams stays healthy and is able to come in immediately and play as well as he did at USC. USC had their issues. He had no offensive line there. He's going to have an offensive line with the Bears. He's going to have weapons. He's going to have guys he can throw the ball to. So I would say the Bears have first come to mind as the team that really won the draft and gets the A, but they should have. They had the first and ninth pick, and they had a generational quarterback available, as we think he is. So the Bears should have won the draft, and they did. They found a way not to screw this up, which is saying a lot for the Bears.
A lot of local interest in the Broncos. You obviously have a and personal interest in the Broncos.
Yes.
Do you believe in what they did? Are you a Bo Nix fan, or do you think that was too much of a reach?
I think everybody but two or three quarterbacks were a reach in the first round. I mean, is Michael Penix a reach at eight? Absolutely. Is J.J. McCarthy worth a ninth pick or a tenth pick? Or was it 11th? No. I don't think Drake May is a first-round pick either. But the way with football now, you got to have a quarterback, and these franchises are desperate. And so everybody's trying to get them. And so if you want to get them, you got to get them early. So I think it kind of forced the hand of a team like the Broncos that knows they need a quarterback. And I don't think they wanted to go into the season with the current quarterback room the way it was. I think they wanted to go find a guy that they can latch onto and build on. And I think that Sean Payton wanted to find a franchise guy. They believe they found it in Bo Nix. I'm sure you guys have heard the stories about the workout they did and the test they put him through. And they walked away thinking he was amazing, and that was their guy. So, but we'll see on the field. I think Bo Nix is a guy that's really seasoned, and obviously he's played more college football games than anybody in the history of college football. This is not a guy that's just going out there after 2 years in college. He's got a lot of experience, and he's been through a lot of adversity. So he'll be tested, and I think I don't know that he's going to start day one, game one, I think they might lean on Zach Wilson or Jarrett Stidham, but I imagine by midseason, he's probably going to be starting and he's going to be the guy, and they want him to be the guy, and he's going to be their franchise quarterback. We'll see how that goes. The Broncos haven't had much luck since Peyton Manning in finding a quarterback that can lead them. And even before they got Peyton Manning, they were having issues finding a guy after John Elway. So it's not an easy thing to do to find quarterbacks, and that's why you saw six taken in the first round. Is teams are desperate for that leader. We'll see if Bo Nix is that guy. But if he is, then the Broncos did a great job with this draft, and Sean Payton continues to prove he's the genius that he's got the reputation of being.
Jeremiah, thank you. We'll be listening this afternoon.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, JJ.
Jeremiah Jensen. I hope the Broncos fail miserably.
Oh, man, if Zach Wilson's not the starter day one, it's a difficult situation to find yourself in.
Yeah, whatever. They're going to lose.
If Stidham is starting, it's a really difficult spot because all of a sudden that means Zach's still the third.
He won't be on the team. If Stidham starts, they'll cut.
You think they'll cut Zach?
Yeah. They're not going to carry that kind of...
A third quarterback.
And a second, quote-unquote, veteran. They're not going to do that.
Probably not. That's not what NFL teams are doing anymore.
So Zach's got to beat out Stidham, not Bo Nix.
Well, yeah, he's not going to beat out Bo Nix. Meaning, like, Bo Nix is entrenched in the top two. He's not going to get waived. We know Bo Nix is going to make the roster next year. So he's got to be probably one. And if Bo Nix starts, then you're never going to Zach Wilson, ever.
Except for he'll never make it through healthy and...
Sure.
They'll go to him for... It'd be interesting. Do you start a guy to fail before you bring in your rookie, which is like how Tyrod Taylor has made a living in the NFL?
Yeah.
He goes to these teams where they draft quarterbacks and he goes out and plays his best until the Chargers puncture his lung and then Justin Herbert starts, you know?
Yeah.
Like, put Zach out there, let him take his lumps while the new guy is getting used to things, and then eventually you're pressured to replace Zach.
I think
Zach
they're doing
Wilson
that regardless.
With, right.
Yeah, so, they're doing that with either with Stidham or with Zach Wilson.
I would
so
guess.
Zach's
yes.
got to beat out Jarrett Stidham.
Right. I would guess. Because you don't – if I were the Broncos, knowing that I'm going to lose next year, why would you throw the rookie into the deep end his first year? Now, maybe he, you know, steps in game 10 and you can sell to your fan base like, oh, all is lost, so we might as well get the young rookie some work. But I'd be surprised if they went with Bo Nix day one.
Yep.
Stay tuned. Wrapping up the show next, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
The sports you love. The teams you can't live without.
Get a sense of urgency!
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Two amigos on the airways, talking sports. They got him made Jake's and also loves his tie guy. Ben's got style with his scarf. Oh my.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Jake Scott, Ben Anderson want to remind you about Peach Doors and Windows, Utah's premier door and window retailer, combining beauty and technology on doors and windows since 1993. Call them today for your free in-home estimate, 801-566-1255, Peach Doors and Windows. How's it going over there, Ben?
Having a good time.
You doing well?
Life's good, man. I'm happy. For the people in our lives.
Meaning?
Yeah, we'll elaborate further. But change and growth and everything's good. I'm excited about a hockey team coming in. I'm excited for all of it.
Yeah, it is. It seems good.
We needed it. Our state needed it. And again, I know with Big 12 and everything that there was some change going on, but we needed a difference maker. We needed dominance, as you said earlier. You need players who dominate. The NHL dominates. It's a dominant move. That's not, with all due respect, it's a huge deal for BYU to get in the Big 12. I'm not overrating that or underrating that at all. It's a huge deal. They needed to move. But you need landscape-shifting movement to continue to grow sometimes. And, you know, this is a crater hitting the earth and moving on from the dinosaurs. This is a shift. This is a major shift that we're getting, and I'm always excited for growth.
Yeah, well, I'm always excited for me, frankly.
Yeah, of course. I am excited for me.
Just really looking out for what's important.
Number one.
And that's me.
Yeah, that's us.
And that really is me. No, it is. I totally agree with you. It's great. And it's a fun time for the show, fun time for the station, fun time for KSL Sports. I mean, it's really great.
Yep.
Hanson, Scotty G are coming up next. Stay tuned. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks,
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.